Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Snap and hold are good. The kick is good!
I love Sean McDonough. He is just so good. And that voice, when he really gets fired up, it starts to crack. And it is wonderful to listen to. Wow. That game turned, man. It was really painful to watch those teams go at it in the first half. It was domination, really, by Penn State in the first half, especially at the line of scrimmage. They probably should have led by more. They led by 7 at half, and then the game got nuts in the second half. Incredibly entertaining. Notre Dame advances to the national championship game with a walk-off. It wasn't actually a walk-off, but a field goal with just a few seconds to go to beat Penn State 27-24. James Franklin still looking for that big win. Good morning. Denton is with me. Ben Standing will join us at 10:35. Got my keys to a win Sunday night in Tampa coming up. We'll make picks on all six NFL wildcard weekend games. I've got smell test picks for, by the way, tonight's second semifinal game at the Cotton Bowl between Ohio State and Texas, and a couple of NFL games as well. Let's quickly, though, Denton, talk about last night. You know, I'm going to start with this, because I'll give you a takeaway, you give me a takeaway, and we'll go back and forth until we're done. Drew Aller was terrible in this game. And it's something that, you know, we talked about during the course of the season. Very inconsistent. Some bad games, some good games. I didn't trust him going into the game. I didn't trust Franklin. I put this more on Aller than I do even James Franklin, because there were plays there to be had. A touchdown, certainly, or two in the first half that he missed on. This was a bad game by Penn State's starting quarterback, and for me, that's the number one reason they lost this game. Your first big takeaway is what?
Drew Aller. Drew Aller was awful.
You know, terrible.
We had been waiting 2 years, and I did kind of laugh a little bit at Greg McElroy, who I love. I think he does a great job. But saying late in the game, they need to unleash Drew Aller. No. They need to run the ball. We've been waiting for 2 years for a Drew Aller game. We have never gotten a Drew Aller game. He's just not. Maybe year three is the one that's going to do it, Kevin. But he is just not a championship-level quarterback. Riley Leonard was making some throws last night. Drew Aller was missing. Oh, my God. How many points did they leave on the scoreboard in the first quarter with misses? Missing to Singleton that led to a field goal rather than a touchdown. Missing to Singleton again on a wheel route down the sideline that at the very least is a massive gain. Potentially, I mean, I love the ball in Singleton's hand. Potentially a touchdown if he makes a dude miss down the field. Like, there are just so many little examples of misses that piled up over the course of the game that cost him at least 10 to 14 points. And they could have used an extra 10 to 14 points.
Well, how many interceptions were called back because of penalties, too, right? He had the critical back-breaking pick at the end of the game that allowed for Notre Dame to get in field goal range and kick the game winner. But he had two interceptions that were terrible throws that actually got called back due to penalties. And to be fair, at least one of them, the one in the end zone, that was such a poorly thrown, underthrown ball. It was DPI, but if the defender doesn't get anywhere near the receiver, it still gets picked off.
I hated that call. I did not like that call at all.
I agree with you. They should. I mean, Singleton and Allen were running the football. They were winning at the line of scrimmage all night long for the most part in the run game. Putting the ball into his hands, unless we were throwing screens to Tyler Warren, you know, or, you know, bootlegs to Tyler Warren where there was some space. It was really ugly to watch Aller. My second big takeaway, you've already mentioned it, and Riley Leonard after the game, very, very religious in sort of his answers, but he said that he didn't feel like he did enough. I actually thought he played big-time championship-winning football in the second half. He got, you know, his bell rung at the end of the first half. The backup quarterback, Steve Angeli, came in and did a really good job. In fact, the 3 points at the end of the first half, especially when he got sacked, fumbled, and Penn State couldn't come up with the recovery, which was a big play at the end of the first half, that was a huge field goal going into halftime to keep that a one-score game because they had been dominated, you know. They were dominated at the line of scrimmage. In fact, it was really odd to see a game in which one team dominated both sides of the ball at the line of scrimmage for 30 minutes and then came out and it was almost flipped entirely, especially in the third quarter. But I thought Riley Leonard had some big-time throws and some big-time runs. And I thought he played championship-winning football. Somebody reminded me during the game, what was his over-under in passing yards? It was like 164, we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
And we're like, how is that going to go over? 223. But basically all of it in the second half.
You think that huge, that bomb, that 54-yarder to Great House where the Penn State DB fell down.
He fell down, yeah. But still, it was man coverage, and who knows how it would have played out anyway. It looked like part of the reason he fell down was a quick kind of first move
right
off the line of scrimmage. I thought he played great. I mean, he's got limitations. He played awesome football, I thought, in the second half.
It does really speak to your point, though, because if you just make a list, right, you say, all right, who are the five best players in the game last night? Notre Dame had one of them. And it was Leonard. You're looking at Warren, Singleton, Allen, and then on defense, Abdul Carter, who just announced.
Well, Warren and Carter were the two best players in the game.
They were the two best players, and then Singleton and Allen were also on that list. So Notre Dame had one of the five best players, and they still found a way to win the football game because the Penn State offense struggled immensely throwing the football in the second half. Or really for the entire game, but mostly in the second half when they needed it. I mean, that pick that Drew Aller threw. You've been in college for 2 years. This is a championship type of game. You got to know you can't make that throw across the middle. Every single coach tells you that.
Yeah, it was a terrible throw. And that's why, like, to me, James Franklin will take a pounding for this one. They, like you just said, they had more great players on the field than their opponent did. This was as good a team as he's had. They were outstanding at times and almost suffocating at times defensively, especially in the first half. And they lost the game, but I really put it on the quarterback, which leads to this, because I was listening to Paul Feinbaum early this morning.
Yeah.
And he was crucifying Franklin for trying to score at the end of regulation when they got the ball back at the 15-yard line. And putting the ball into Drew Aller's hands in that spot. I really vehemently disagree with that, and I'll tell you why. First of all, if he had run out the clock and gone to overtime and lost, he would have been crucified for that. But he didn't start off thinking, I'm putting the ball into Drew Aller's hands. They had a huge run on first down. It was like a 14 or 15-yard run by Singleton that got the ball out close to the 30-yard line. And they banged a timeout at that point, and it's like, okay, now you should go for it. So I had no problem. The next play was the interception. I had no problem, especially with Tyler Warren on the field. Like, throw it to him, and that was the intention on the play that got picked. The first read was Warren. They had him, you know, covered. The second read was bracketed, and he came back and he made the mistake that you can't make. You have to live to play another down, second and 10, throw that ball away. And he came back across the field. We all know as football fans, as a quarterback on a third read, you can't come back and throw completely across the field against the grain. And it wasn't a good throw. He claimed, by the way, I thought it was interesting, and it's not that I don't believe him. He claimed that he was trying to dirt the ball, meaning throw it short and throw it incomplete. That's not what happened with the football. It sailed. It stayed up. And it got picked.
He said he tried to dirt that interception?
He did. He said that. And I watched a lot of the post game. That's exactly what he said.
That dude is a liar.
I don't know that. I don't know that that's it. I think, you know, when you dirt a ball like that in the middle of the field, you have to be you have to be careful that you don't, you know, get called for grounding or that it doesn't look super obvious. I don't know. Whatever. The point being, I had no problem once they ran the ball and got out close to the 30-yard line on that first down run that they were trying to get in field goal range. I mean, can you imagine? Seriously, they run the ball for, I'm looking at the box score now, it was a 13-yard run, okay, from the 15 to the 28. So they're out at the 28-yard line, they bang a timeout. Can you imagine if that at that point they'd gotten conservative and just played for overtime? He would have been crushed.
Crushed.
I had no problem with them going for, at that point, that run was the key play. If you get 2 yards on that run or you get a yard and it's second down and 9 from your own 16, okay, fine, let's play for overtime. Once Singleton ripped off that run, you got to go for it. You know, and by the way, Aller at times this year has made some big-time throws. You talked about it yesterday, the SC game. He was outstanding in the Oregon game. Look, when they were down 8 in the Big Ten title game and he threw that pick late, that was a great defensive play, if you recall. I got Tyler Warren out there. I got, you know, you can talk about the fact that Penn State did not have a catch by a wide receiver in the game. That is a true stat from last night. I still, once I got to there, I'm being aggressive. You know, and look, second and 10, he should have lived to play second and 10, should have thrown that away. And you can say, well, he was rattled all game and shouldn't have put the ball in his hands. He had made a couple of good throws to Warren in particular, who was, by the way, the best player on the field in the game.
Yes. Yeah, he was sensational. I don't understand. I mean, I'm not like the biggest Paul Feinbaum guy in the world. I think he's a super SEC guy. I don't love him elsewhere. I don't understand crucifying a guy for trying to win a semifinal game.
It was kind of silly. I was listening to it, and a couple of the guys on the the Greenberg Get Up Show, and a couple of the guys immediately pushed back on him. But I think that the key part of the answer, the pushback, is he didn't go into that drive thinking, we're going down there to get a field goal and win in regulation. We're going to be aggressive. We're putting the ball into my quarterback's hands right from the jump. They ran the ball on first down, and it was that, you know, when you have that situation, a lot of coaches will, you know, they'll throw a screen or they'll run the ball, and if they get something, if they get a nice run, a healthy run, or a healthy chunk play on a screen or whatever, then they'll go for it. That's what happened there, is if Singleton gets a yard or 2 yards, the clock's going to run out. They're going to overtime. Once he ripped off a 13-yard run and there are 33 seconds left and you still have timeouts, you're not sitting back at that point from your own 28-yard line. You're going for it.
Right.
And so I didn't have a problem with that. I think the I'll tell you what we were wrong about, but we weren't wrong at halftime about it, is just the idea that this would be a low-scoring game. And the fireworks in the fourth quarter belied anything that had happened in the game for the first 2.5 to 3 quarters. You know, it was 10-10 going into the fourth quarter. 31 points were scored in the fourth quarter by two teams that really had a hard time budging the line of scrimmage at various times last night. Really exciting semifinal game. We had the Arizona State-Texas game and this game as incredible memories from this tournament so far, with still two games left tonight, Ohio State-Texas, and then the winner playing Notre Dame on Monday night, the 20th of January in Atlanta. What else from the game did you want to say?
Well, I wanted to add to what you just said. I mean, this was a really good game. Like, Texas and Arizona State is one that you could put, as far as the college football playoff is concerned, in that conversation for one of the better games that we've seen. This wasn't that, but it was a really good game. This was a fun game. You were engaged for the entire time. I really enjoyed it. I thought the run by Jeremiah Love, the muscling in for the touchdown.
The touchdown run.
I mean, that's a championship-level run. I haven't been as high on Notre Dame as you have been, but that second half was really, really impressive. I thought Freeman did a good job. You know, it was a decision to put Riley Leonard back into that football game. You could have kept Steven Angeli in there
because
he was throwing
that.
The ball around.
It was
a decision to put Riley Leonard back in there, and it was the right one. I questioned it at first. It was the right one. Marcus Freeman has done a fantastic job with those kinds of decisions, the coaching decisions that we all really focus on, the things that we think that James Franklin struggles with. Freeman against Georgia in the second round, and then obviously last night, he's been really on point with some of those decisions. Now, he's going to have his work cut out for them with whoever they play. Have you looked at any hypothetical lines for the national championship game?
I haven't. I'm just going to guess. Did we already do this yesterday? Ohio State would be an 8.5 favorite over Notre Dame. If it's Texas, I don't know. Texas -3? -2?
You are dead on with Texas. It's -3. Ohio State, this is according to
10.
Not quite 10, 9.5.
Wow.
9.5.
Yeah.
Both over underline set the same at 48.5. I actually thought the Ohio State one would be a little shorter than that.
Look, I'm telling you right now, I got smell test picks coming up on the show. Texas is as big an anti-public, anti-pundit, anti-everything pick as we've had in the postseason by far. Nobody's giving them a chance to win the game. People are absolutely like beside themselves that they can play Ohio State laying less than a touchdown in this game tonight. So I do have a way in which Texas can win this game. It's all about their front four. It's totally about their front four and getting Will Howard to feel it like he did in the Michigan game. But that's basically it. I don't know any other way. I thought that last night was spectacular. And at the end of the first half, it was like, oh, my God. For most people who don't tune in until maybe this time of year, that was a boring first half. That was a painful first half. The quarterback play wasn't anywhere near good enough. Aller just missed too many opportunities. The line of scrimmage was dominated by Penn State, and they only had a 7-point lead. And real quickly on the point you made, I felt the same way. I was like, I wonder what he's going to do if Riley Leonard's cleared to come out. Because the other kid, Angeli, is a better thrower and a better quick game thrower. It certainly appeared that way at the end of the first half. Now, he got lucky. He got hit, and that ball was out, and I still don't know how the Penn State D-tackle didn't fall on, or DN didn't fall on the ball and recover it. That was a big, you know, bottom-of-the-pile recovery by Notre Dame, because if not, maybe they're down 13-0 at halftime, but best case, it's 10-0 at halftime. Instead, it went 10-3. But really entertaining game. Marcus Freeman, remember... What was the comment from when he left Notre Dame? What was Brian Kelly's comment about national championships? About Notre Dame?
He chose LSU because he wanted to go to a place where he could win a national championship.
Right. And he said that out loud. And I'll never forget the feeling I had as somebody old enough to remember when Notre Dame was it. And by the way, they're still pretty important in college sports. But to leave Notre Dame because you don't feel like you have a chance to win a national championship there as much as you do at LSU was a jarring statement about the state of Notre Dame. Look, they're not in a conference. There's a, you know, but James Franklin took a mini shot at Freeman or at Notre Dame the other day about them not being in a league. But Brian Kelly hasn't sniffed one, and Marcus Freeman's in a national championship game. Some people are annoyed by Marcus Freeman and his, you know, his reactions on the sideline. I love the guy. I think they're very well coached, and they have been. And he made the right call on Riley Leonard in the second half.
I love Marcus Freeman, by the way. I think he's excellent.
I think he's excellent, too. Okay, that was fun last night. Hope you stayed up and didn't turn it off at halftime because it was totally worth it in the second half. Penn State, James Franklin, He doesn't win these games, period. And he's going to have to win one eventually, and I don't know if he will, because this may have been his best team. And my God, is Abdul Carter a beast. He committed to the NFL draft today. He'll be more likely than not the first defensive player taken in the draft. They had stars on that team, and they beat SMU and Boise. And that was their path to the semifinals. And then couldn't beat a Notre Dame in which, let's face it, they're more talented than Notre Dame. But I don't really put it solely on him. I think his quarterback had a dreadful night. It could have been so much worse statistically, too. Because there were interceptions that were called back for penalties. There were misses, like you said, that wheel route miss in the first half. It was a bad day for the junior quarterback in Happy Valley. He ain't going into the draft. There was some talk about if he wins last night and if he won a national championship, he could end up being a top five pick and maybe even emerge as the number one pick. Not after that performance last night. I would imagine he'll be back in Happy Valley next year. All right, Washington at Tampa Bay, the focus of the rest of the show, although we will talk about the other five wild card games, the last of which did officially get moved to Phoenix, to Glendale on Monday night. Minnesota jumped, by the way, to a 2.5-point favorite after the move there. I will tell you that for, and I think a lot of you guys know this, that Arizona tends to be a big, you know, snowbird destination for the Midwesterners and Canadians. It's kind of the west coast of Florida. It's like Midwesterners go to the west coast of Florida and Arizona, and East Coasters go to South Florida on the East Coast. That's going to be a home field advantage, Denton, I'm telling you right now, for Minnesota. It's a home game for Minnesota Monday night with the move. All right. I'm going to split up the keys to beating Tampa. I'm going to roll them out kind of during the course of the show. We're going to give you guys a chance as well on the phones today. Ben's going to join us at 10:35, but defensively, what do they have to do Sunday night to give themselves a chance to get off the field and hold Tampa to something less than, say, 27 in the game? I've got those keys next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. I'm going to give you the keys to a win over Tampa on Sunday. I'm going to do defensive keys here. I'll do offensive keys next hour. Ben Standing is going to join us in about 10 minutes. So Washington beats Tampa Bay, and I'm going to start with defense. This has been an absolute, you know, motif, a recurring theme for probably, you know, 85 to 90% of the games this year. You have to stop the run. Bucky Irving, he's one of the best in the league, and most casual NFL fans don't have any clue how good he is. He is, for starters, incredible at making people miss. All right, they have a very good offensive line, and they run the ball in a lot of ways, similar to the way we run it at times. Lots of counter action, you know, lots of guard tackle pulling. He is patient. He is strong. He is quick. He's fast. But his ability, when you've watched, and I went back and watched a few of the games condensed, he makes that first guy miss over and over again, and we have had issues with that. He averaged 5.4 yards per carry. I think defensively you have to err on the side of being aggressive in this game. You've got to crowd it at the line of scrimmage. You've got to trust as much as you can in the coverage with Marshawn Lattimore playing behind it. You've got to sell out to stop the run. All the while, and this is another big part of what Tampa will do, the aggression needs to be intelligent because of Tampa's screen game. You know, their screen game is excellent. They throw a lot of screens, a lot of behind-the-line-of-scrimmage throws. But they will throw traditional running back screens, but tight end screens, wide receiver screens, they've been very good in the screen game. So they run it well, and they screen it well. You know, the balance of kind of selling out to stop the run while not missing tackles when you're stopping the run on a guy like Bucky Irving, and then not being so overly aggressive where you get run by in the screen game, that's a huge challenge Sunday night. But I personally feel like, and I could be totally wrong about this, of course I could be, but I think if you sit back and you play where we're not going to give up anything over the top, you know, we're going to bend, don't break, I think you are guaranteed to die a slow death. And more importantly, you're guaranteed to die a slow death with your quarterback being on the sideline watching helplessly. This is a go-after-em game, I think. It's Luvu, it's Wagner, it's Fowler Jr., it's Farrell, it's everybody. Make Tampa beat you with the big play. They can do it. I'm not saying that they can't do it that way, but to me, there's more of a chance of error on a big shot, more of a chance of kind of a close miss on a big shot. I'd rather lose defensively on Sunday, giving up the big play, than hoping you can stop them when they get to the red zone after a 6.5 minute drive that's already 10 or 11 plays deep. I need my offense on the field Sunday night as much as possible. I need a bunch of opportunities with Jaden Daniels on the field. He can't be on the sideline watching Tampa run, you know, 10 to 15 more plays in the game than he gets, or with a time of possession advantage of 35 minutes to 25 minutes. That is not a recipe for a win. You've got to stop the run in this game. You've got to tackle well. You can't allow, and it's hard, this guy to make you miss over and over again, because he's going to get 5.4 yards per carry if that happens. It's a long night on defense if you can't stop the run and if you can't slow down their screen game. And then the next thing defensively is third down. Tampa leads the league offensively. Third down conversions, 50.9%. In their last seven games, they're 52.5%. And when you watch Baker Mayfield in some of these games, there are a couple of things that really stand out. He is excellent in the pocket, and he is excellent off schedule. If you go back to that first game, and I don't think there's a whole hell of a lot to take from the first game of the season, you know, maybe in the way Todd Bowles kind of thought about Jaden Daniels and how to approach Jaden Daniels, and he went after Jaden Daniels. And by the way, Jaden Daniels made him pay with 88 yards rushing in a bunch of situations. But if you remember defensively, they had Baker Mayfield multiple times for sacks, and he got out of it. He's very good in the pocket. He's much better than I think I thought he was in the pocket. Off schedule, he's great. You let him get out of the pocket and extend the play. Part of that is Mike Evans, you know, McMillan, Kate Otten, by the way, the tight end who is expected to be back. You just can't cover those guys for 3+ seconds or longer, you know, if he gets outside of the pocket. This is a challenge, man. If you can do a good job on first and second down against the run, against their counteraction, not making Bucky Irving make you miss and end up with a 5-yard gain when there was a chance for a 1 or a 2-yard gain, you know, making sure you're disciplined in the screen game and you tackle and you get these guys to the ground, and it's 2nd and 7 or it's 2nd and 6 or it's 2nd and 9, hopefully. Third downs, they're the best. They were number one in the league on third downs. And it's Baker Mayfield's, he's got very good feel in the pocket, vision down the field, but he's really good at moving the ball away from the rush, making a step here or a step there or a step up or a step sideways to create that extra, you know, half of a second, extra, you know, third of a second. And that's a difference, because you can't cover that long. And he makes those throws. And then outside the pocket, man, forget about it. It is over if you think you're going to cover Mike Evans and McMillan and Kate Otten and their running backs. if you're gonna, if you think you're gonna cover them on an extended play by Baker Mayfield outside the pocket. Third down, if you can get them into third downs and you can get them into third down and at least medium, I think you got to come after him, and I think you got to make him, you know, make a quick decision, and you can't let him manipulate the pocket. They had opportunities in that first game. They had so many opportunities to get him to the ground, and they didn't, and he made him pay. You have to get him to the ground in this game. I don't, as it probably sounds like, I don't have a lot of confidence in their ability defensively against even average teams. But this is an excellent offensive team, and it's very, very versatile. You know, they run the football. They screen you. They've got a quarterback who can extend, and he's deadly when he extends. He's also got the ability to create more time in the pocket. You can't give him that kind of time because you can't cover behind it for that long, even with Lattimore on the field. This is a massive challenge. Massive challenge defensively Sunday night. It's one of those games, and I've said this before in these situations, where you almost have to hope that Baker does what he does, you know, a couple times a game. He will force something. He will put something up for grabs, and you got to make him pay for that. Or you get a phantom holding, or you get a phantom ineligible downfield, or you got to get him out of, you know, on schedule offense. And sometimes, you know, you can get in a game penalties that you're like, I didn't see that as a hold. And you got Collinsworth going, you know, on the replay, that really isn't a hold. And you get Terry McCauley who gets on, yeah, Chris, you're right, that's not a hold. But they're walking it back 10 yards anyway. You need some of those in this game defensively. I think the only chance you have overall is to be overly aggressive. And you got to be careful when you're overly aggressive in the screen game. Make them beat you with the chunk play. If that happens, fine. Then you're back on the field faster on offense. The offensive keys coming up next hour. Ben Standig next. Ben Standig's with us, as he is every Friday and Monday. He'll be back with us on Monday. We got a playoff game on Sunday night. And it's fun to have a playoff game to talk about. So I do want to just start with the health of Washington, because it would certainly appear as if they're in good shape heading into this game Sunday night. And there were some concerns, obviously, before the season finale and even coming out of the season finale. But it sounds like they'll be loaded with their best players ready to go Sunday night, right? As far as we know.
As far as we know, I mean, they had everybody on the injury report yesterday was practicing to some degree, maybe a couple limited. A couple guys like John Bates went from like full to limited, so don't know quite what that means. But, yeah, everybody was practicing to some degree yesterday, and that hasn't happened for a long time. I mean, obviously, Marshon Lattimore's been out the last couple of weeks. Tyler Biadasz was out last week. And so on. So, yeah, I mean, all things being equal, it appears that they are about as in good a position health-wise as, you know, you could kind of ask for at this point of the year.
Give me the player that is, you know, been out or been compromised here in recent weeks that you think is the biggest return to the lineup fully healthy Sunday.
I mean, it's sort of a 1A, 1B for me. I mean, look, I think Tyler Biadasz has been, you know, he's arguably been their most consistent offensive lineman this year. The center, you know, is obviously a very big help for the quarterback, whether it's, you know, calling out signals or pointing out potential blitzes or what have you. And Biadasz, you know, without him, you know, look, their run game has been off the last few weeks. I mean, he's been in there when some of that's been going on. But I think getting Biadasz back is a pretty huge deal for an offensive line that we know has been okay this year, but doesn't really have, you know, it's one of the things they're going to have to upgrade in the offseason. That said, for this particular game, and maybe just in general, I don't know how the answer is anybody other than Marshon Lattimore, which is crazy to say for a guy that hasn't played two full games since he's been acquired. But, you know, we know what Tampa Bay is bringing. Baker Mayfield had a phenomenal year. Mike Evans is an absolute monster. Of course, he got two touchdowns against these guys in the opener. And if Lattimore's not able to go, I assume that he is, but you know, if he's not out there or not at full strength, I don't know what they're going to do as that second cornerback. So I think Lattimore in this game in particular is, you know, absolutely vital. And again, you know, we've talked about this a lot. This is the first game they all have played in a long time that the starting quarterback is a real one. You know, it's not a backup or it's not somebody who's just learning or whatever. So you're going to need your secondary to be as loaded as possible.
You know, I'm going to ask you more specifically about Marshawn Lattimore, because let's just assume for a moment that he is at full strength. I would assume that he is if he's going to play. Are our expectations for how different the defense looks with him in it, are they a little bit inflated? It wasn't great against Philadelphia. He's still new to the system in terms of actual snaps on the field. I kind of feel like, and I'm not saying that I'm not kind of in this boat as well, but that a lot of us, fans included, kind of feel like he's a bit of a magic bullet, and I don't know that that is a fair description of what he brings, at least on Sunday night. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're talking about, you know, Darryl Green here for the purposes of what we're talking about. And, you know, he's barely played. He's barely played for the last, you know, like 2+ months, you know, 3 months, whatever it's been, even when he missed a game or two with the Saints. So it's hard to say they can rely on him, or that even if he's at full strength, he's definitely going to be the shutdown corner that, you know, everybody kind of envisions. If everything is going well for him, it's more of just the hope. I mean, I no disrespect to, you know, the other cornerback options. Not, you know, Mikey Sanders still obviously had a very good year as a rookie, but like it's hard to have, from the outside at least, it's hard to have a ton of faith with the other cornerback options. I mean, both Benjamin St. Juice and Mike Davis have been knocked out of the rotation at various times this year. You know, maybe St. Juice was unfairly penalized in that pass interference last week. But, you know, we watched this show. He gets penalized a lot gives up plays. So it's what the potential is. Without Lattimore, I just don't know that they can we can really raise expectations for this defense. With him, I think Joe Witt Jr. can more comfortably, you know, have like a Jeremy Chinn play closer to the line of scrimmage to help out the run game, which is obviously something that's been a huge issue for this defense all year. He could maybe send more blitzes in just to disrupt the offense, because he feels like he has got a guy on the outside that can go one-on-one and doesn't need help. It's more from that perspective. Whether he performs to that level, again, we've barely seen him this year, so it would be inane to say he's definitely that guy, but at least we have seen him be that guy in his career. And that, I think, is kind of what we're talking about.
I think when we're all, and everybody listening for the most part, you, me, Denton, when we're this immersed in a subject, you know, this team and the games that they've played and the game that they're about to play, you start to sort of play it out in your mind as to how it will go, especially on the side of how they would go about winning the game. How have you played that out in your mind? Give me the vision of a win in Tampa and how it kind of plays out.
Sure. Well, I think for one, the offense has got to start much faster, right? They've been very quiet some of these, you know, just these last 2 weeks. You know, trailed 6-3 at halftime to Dallas, trailed 17-7 to the Falcons. One reason they're having to constantly come back in games is because they're falling behind, especially early. I think they've got to be able to come out strong in the best case scenario. You know, doesn't mean they have to put up a Doug Williams type quarter. I just mean, you know, get the ball moving, let your defense not be playing constantly, you know, all that type of complimentary football action. I think that defensively, you know, they have got to be able to slow down the run a little bit. I get it. It's not going to go from, zero to hero on defense, but they can't give up. You know, like Dan Quinn pointed out this week, it wasn't like Dallas broke off like 50-yard runs. They were just getting 4 and 5 and 6 consistently, and they landed with 150. And, you know, if that's going to be the case that they're going to be in big trouble, considering what Tampa can do in the passing game. So, you know, they've got to be able to stop the run and or slow it down enough. It goes without saying, you know, you got to avoid the turnovers, and you know, the penalties have cropped up more and more of late. They've got to play the cleaner brand of football that they were earlier in the year. And then I think, like, in terms of, like, some of the bigger moments, you know, Tampa Bay is very stout against the run, but they've got some questions in the secondary. They've got some injuries, and that's what, you know, the defenses are kind of the opposite. They're going to get more yards passing. Washington is, you know, giving it more on the ground. Hit some of these receivers down the field deep. Terry McLaurin, obviously, you know, De'Ami Brown's best asset is his speed. We've seen Jaden hit him for some longer gains. You know, throw the ball deep to him once or twice against a secondary that is not going to be, you know, shouldn't be that, you know, tough relative to some other teams. So I think those are just some of the main keys for me. I mean, you know, so much of Washington stuff just feels basic. We run the ball better, stop the run. But I think, you know, in this one game, I think those are the things that kind of stand out to me that they've got to get done.
If we take Jaden and Terry out of this, out of the potential answers for my following question on offense, and say Luvu, Wagner, and Lattimore on defense, give me a couple of players that you think have a chance to really step up and make a big difference.
Well, I think on offense, you know, look, Austin Eckler played way more last week than I would have thought. Didn't have a ton of touches, but you know, you can look at whatever, you know, the film, you can look at the numbers, the offense, even though they're scoring points still, it just has not been the same since he's been out of the lineup. He helps diversify the run game, and, you know, even if Brian Robinson hadn't been struggling, you know, or the run game with Robinson hasn't been struggling, you're going up against Vita Vea and Cansey. That's, like, you know, a really good defensive tackle combination. It feels like to break runs, you're going to have to probably do it more on the outside, and, you know, if Jaden, you know, Tampa Bay's pass rush gets to Jaden, he can't always wait to go downfield, and Eckler is a great, you know, safety valve and route runner underneath. So I think Eckler having a big game is pretty significant for Washington. Defensively, I don't know. I think Quan Martin's just been sort of overlooked this year to a degree. He's just been really steady, and it's funny because he's obviously like the one guy from the last year's draft class that has actually been a legit help. He gives you a lot of hitting. He's been good in coverage. I just think that maybe he just gets, like, some of the other guys are sort of like role players, whether you're talking about a Dante Fowler or some of the other linemen. I just think Quan Martin is a play-in, play-out guy who's going to be in the field all the time. He's just going to have to be on point, whether it's helping on a double team if Mike Evans or Jalen McMillan, or if the ball is going to them, or supporting the run game, or just making sure, hey, if you're going to go over the middle, you know, get prepared to pay a price. So I think Quan Martin having a big game would be a huge deal for Washington.
I'm totally with you on Eckler. I think that what we saw on Sunday was a real effort to make sure that he was ready to go for this game and maybe beyond. 100% right. I think we all recognize it. They haven't been the exact same without him. He's been missed more than Noah Brown's been missed. He's been missed as much as anybody's been missed. And he took 60% of the offensive snaps last week, and Brian Robinson Jr. took 40%. When you think about the game, Ben, you know, are you going to bang your head trying to run it against Cansey and Vita Vea, et cetera, rather than, you know, having Eckler in the game as another, you know, a legitimate eligible pass receiver? I think he's going to be big in the game, and I think that's why we saw so much of him last week. I think they wanted to make sure that he wasn't tentative, that he wasn't hesitant, that they were going to get the real Austin Eckler. And by the way, I think he looked like the real Austin Eckler last week, don't you?
I mean, I didn't sense any, you know, a guy that was playing cautious. Again, he didn't get a ton of carries, but you know, I can't remember if we discussed this the other day, but last week I asked Dan Quinn, hey, is there anything to be said, you know, for activating Eckler, playing him a decent amount in this game against Dallas, just to sort of, like, you know, make sure he's good, you know, knock off any rust or just any doubts that he might have? And Quinn kind of blew it off, like, no, whatever. But then after the game, he said that was exactly the point of what they were doing. It was to make sure that, you know, that Eckler had any, you know, that he's got emotions going into this, right? He's got a, you know, how could he not? So, you know, are you comfortable being out there? Because, yeah, if you just waited and didn't do that, then this game it would be perhaps too much to overcome, you know, dealing with emotions, the rust, and the playoff intensity. So, yeah, I think it was key. And, you know, I don't know that he necessarily had any of those, like, you know, big plays that we've seen most of the year. But, yeah, having him out there that much and him looking comfortable, you know, I think was a pretty significant day.
Ben Standing joining us at Ben Standing on X on Twitter. Subscribe to The Athletic. I'm a subscriber. It's totally worth it. Where you can read Ben, you can read David Aldridge, you can read everybody that will be covering this game. Ben's got a podcast called Standing Room Only as well, and he is this show's Washington Commanders insider. He'll be with us Monday after the game as well. So this is the first game, you know, for many players, although there are a lot of players on Washington's roster that will be playing Sunday night with playoff experience. But for the quarterback, he's checked every box, you know, every regular season box you can check. The box that he hasn't checked yet is he hasn't played in a true kind of this is it. You win and you keep playing, you lose, you go home. The Atlanta game wasn't exactly that. You know, they could have beaten Dallas in the final had they lost to Atlanta. But this is a true moment of, you know, you got to win to survive. How do you think he'll do?
Yeah, you know, you are an advocate of the gambling dark arts, Kevin. If you generally see a rookie quarterback making his first start in the playoffs, it's nice to go to lean the other way. I mean, it's a reasonable chance that the rookie is going to come up small, whether it's nerves or inexperience or what have you. There's zero to suggest that's going to happen here. I mean, the things we've talked about all year, the poise, the composure, you're right that he hasn't had this single game where that win or go home or just, you know, you got to make the playoffs kind of game, but you know, we've seen him over and over and over again rise up in the fourth quarter, in the final 2 minutes and what have you. So I think to that end, I'm not worrying about it. You know, the only thing would be sort of reverting back a little bit to like the version we saw in Tampa, you know, feeling the pressure, feeling like if the pass rush pressure, getting out of the pocket too quick. Ironically, that's been happening more lately anyway. Not that he's getting out of the pocket too quick, but he's had the sense of like, hey, I have to do more here. We're not running the ball. You know, the offensive line, we're getting a lot of pressure. I have to go make plays. He absolutely willed them to the win against Atlanta in overtime. And so that's where like sort of that the first game and his present kind of like have come back, come sort of full circle, but it's in a very different way. He's in control now of when this is happening, whereas in the first game, it felt like he was just sort of bailing out of the pocket just to sort of do it because of, you know, whatever he sensed around him. Look, Tampa's an experienced team. This is a group that's, you know, won the NFC South 4 years in a row. This is not going to be a new stage for them, and it will be for him. But I'm not saying he's going to have a perfect game, you know, or he's going to be, you know, the player of the week, but I'd be fairly stunned at this point if he comes out and looks like a rookie, if you know what I mean.
Do you know how many rookie quarterbacks, and I looked this up before the show, have won a playoff game in the history of the postseason since merger, you know, since 1970? I mean, I'm assuming you don't have the answer off the top of your head. It is not a lot.
Yeah.
The list includes, by the way, two guys from the last two playoff seasons, C.J. Stroud last year, Brock Purdy the year before. By the way, John Wolford for the Rams won a playoff game because he replaced Jared Goff in the 2020 season. But the total list of quarterbacks that have won playoff games is 11. 11. That's it. And only five quarterbacks have ever won enough to get to the championship games as rookies. No quarterbacks ever started the majority of a season as a rookie and made it to the Super Bowl. Our guy tends to buck, you know, history and trends, so we'll see what happens. All right, go ahead. Give me your prediction for Sunday night.
You know, this is, you know, the over-under, I think, is, you know, total, what is it, like 50, the highest in the wild card round. I think to me that's how this game is going to go. I really do see it being high scoring. It'd be, you know, doesn't feel like a 16-13 rock fight the way you know, these teams can score in the way they play defense. You know, look, obviously I'm concerned about how Washington stops the Tampa Bay offense, but there's ways for Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury to attack Tampa's defense. I just, you know, they'll yell at me, people. I, you know, it's not so much that it's on the road. I just, I've harped on this for a while. The step up in quarterback from every guy they faced for the last several weeks to Baker Mayfield is pretty steep. And, you know, if Washington has just not shown enough on defense for me to say they're going to be able to get a stop when they absolutely have to, or consistently enough. So, I'm going to probably go like Tampa Bay, like 31-28. I think it's going to be, you know, a really close one. What else do you expect from this team? But I just think that Tampa's probably just got a little bit more. Yes, I'm happy to have Jaden Daniels throw that in my face with if he has another unbelievable moment at the end of the game. And based on how they've just done it over and over again, I would expect nothing less. But you're making me strip all that out, I'd go Tampa 31-28.
Here's a question for you and Denton. Denton, are you paying attention?
I'm always paying attention.
Okay. Who's got a better chance among these two teams after Sunday night to make a big run? Tampa or Washington? Ben, you first.
Well, I mean, you know, we know that Washington has, you know, going up against some of the better teams in the league has largely come up short. You know, they beat Philly, but that was Kenny Pickett in there. So, whereas Tampa, you know, they're one of the only teams that beat Detroit this year. You know, that was early in the year, but they have some of those, you know, bigger wins. So I guess I would go Tampa just based mostly on experience.
Yeah. Denton, your answer?
I would also say Tampa. They know what Detroit is like, and they were there last year, too, with a very similar roster to that of last year.
That's part of it. I think last year, they were very close. I mean, they pummeled Philadelphia. They never gave Jalen Hurts a shot. Philly never, you know, remember that night. They never answered the Todd Bowles pass rush. It was insane how many times they had to dump the ball or get sacked in that game. And then I think people forget they had Detroit in a ball game at Ford Field in Detroit's first home game, remember, in, you know, decades in terms of the playoffs. I would agree with you. I think Tampa, I think a lot of people don't realize how good they are and how capable they are on offense. This is a great offensive team. They did not play well, though, last week in a game that they had to have. So we'll see. Talk to you Monday. Enjoy the trip down there. I would imagine, by the way, and tell me if you agree or disagree, I would imagine there's going to be a lot of Washington in the crowd on Sunday night at Raymond James.
I mean, you know, look, I would think so. You know, if you're a Commanders fan that's into going to the games, how could you not be excited to go to this one? I mean, the last couple of trips that I've been on, you know, there have been a ton of fans. The last game coming back from Dallas, I tweeted this the other day that the flight attendant, as you know, welcomed me on the plane, says, "Hey, you know, how about my Commanders or whatever?" And then I couldn't even hear what anything else he said because half the plane started roaring about this team. So yeah, I can see a lot of people going down there. I don't know what Tampa Bay's like usual MO is. I think they're a pretty good home crowd, but yeah, I would think we'll see a lot of burgundy and gold.
I mean, right now, you can get into Raymond James Sunday night, upper deck, for $77. No, it looks like 73 is the lowest price. That's not that bad. All right,
and look, at
thanks.
Least you can escape 20-degree weather for a couple days.
It'd be a nice trip. All right, I'll talk to you Monday. Thanks.
Yep, see ya.
All right, when we come back, I've got the second half of keys to beating Tampa Bay Sunday night, and then give you guys a chance at 301-230-0980. How do they beat them, and then do they beat them? 301-230-0980. You can start lining it up on the phones, and we will get to you at around 11:15, 11:20. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.